This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're having a debate discussion to try to help you understand and appreciate Proposition 47, which is entitled on the November ballot, Criminal Sentences, Misdemeanor Penalties Initiative Statute. My guests are Jeff Rosen, District Attorney of Santa Clara County, Stephen Wagstaff, District Attorney of San Mateo County, Dionne Wilson, Victims Advocate for Crime Survivors for Safety and Justice, and Judge Eugene Hyman, Superior Court, Santa Clara County, retired. Funding for this segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the San Mateo County Bar Association and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Your Legal Rights is also funded by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, by the Family Law Section of the State Bar, and the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar. The prepared in your, and I hope you've gotten it, by the way, the General Election Official Voter Information Guide for Proposition 47, prepared by the Attorney General, states the official title and summary as follows. Criminal Sentences, Misdemeanor Penalties Initiative Statute requires misdemeanor sentence instead of felony for certain drug possession offenses, requires misdemeanor sentence instead of felony for the following crimes when amount involved is $950 or less, $950 or less, petty theft, receiving stolen property, and forging, writing bad checks, allows felony sentence for these offenses if person has previous conviction for crimes such as rape, murder, or child molestation, or is registered sex offender, requires resentencing for persons serving felony sentences for these offenses unless court finds unreasonable public safety risks, applies savings to mental health and drug treatment programs, K-12 schools, and crime victims. An analysis by the legislative analyst, very briefly under the proposal, is as follows. This measure reduces penalties for certain offenders convicted of non-serious and non-violent property and drug crimes. The measure also allows certain offenders who have been previously convicted of such crimes to apply for reduced sentences. In addition, the measure requires any state savings that result from the measure be spent to support truancy, paren unexcused absences, and paren prevention, mental health and substance abuse treatment, and victim services. These changes are described in more detail in the voter pamphlet. What we will do now is District Attorney of Santa Clara County, Jeff Rosen, will make an introduction about why 47 should be passed. You should vote for it. Stephen Wagstaff, District Attorney for San Mateo County, will then take a few minutes to tell you why we shouldn't vote for it, and then we'll go on with questions, etc. For those of you who listen to us live, whether it's in the Bay Area or on the Internet at www.klw.org, you'll have a chance to call in with your questions or comments in the second half hour. DA Jeff Rosen, would you go ahead, please?
Yes, thank you very much. The way that this proposition works, as you had just described, is It reclassifies six low-level nonviolent crimes, including drug possession and petty theft, writing a bad check, and it reclassifies those from felonies to misdemeanors. They can only now be charged as misdemeanors. And the money that is then saved from having fewer individuals go to state prison for having committed those kinds of offenses is then sent back to counties to be spent on drug treatment, mental health programs, truancy programs to keep kids in school, and services for crime victims. I think it's a very sensible, pragmatic, and pro-law enforcement initiative. I support it because I think it's both tough and smart on crime. Our prisons are overcrowded in California. In fact, they're so overcrowded that we send 9,000 prisoners out of our state to other states. So we're spending California taxpayer money to send people to other states because we don't have enough room for them in our prisons, and our prisons are overcrowded on top of all of that. And I think that this is a sensible way of preserving room in our prisons for people that we're scared of, not just people that we are angry at. And that's why I support this.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Steve Wagstaff, Steve, would you do a little bit about why we should not vote for it?
Sure. Good evening, Chuck. Good evening to my fellow guests. Jeff Rosen just gave a very accurate description of what Prop 47 does. I want to supplement, because I don't disagree with we want to help people at the low level fence. But there are two big problems. The two biggest reasons that I'm opposing this are, number one, the proposition is it is offense-based. It is not offender-based. And what I mean by that is that it deals with anybody who commits these low-level, as they're described, felonies and makes them misdemeanors. What I'm concerned about is it does not look to the offender. And there are certain people, there's actually thousands of people, who are offenders who have long criminal records who commit these offenses. As the district attorney, I want to have the discretion to be able to treat them as felonies. The example being somebody who's been to prison multiple times for robbery or domestic violence or human trafficking, kidnapping, anybody. And we do have lots of people like that. I don't think I think as the DA that Jeff and I should have the discretion to say, you know what? That offender, not the offense, which is low level, but the offender, even if he's committing a low level offense that we've tried this multiple times to treat him or whatever it may be, I want to be able to deal with that person as a felon. Second reason is that I'm concerned about it is what I personally believe it will do to realignment. In my county, and I know Jeff in his county and many others, we have really taken realignment that came in October of 2011 to deal with that prison overcrowding, and we've embraced it. We are trying to make it work. Our goal is to get treatment for people. Our goal is for the people who are open to treatment to get that to them. Here's the problem. Even with the money that will be coming through, whatever level that's at, that will be coming through, through the savings in this, no matter what, misdemeanors don't get that attention. It just isn't. I have not found any county where anybody has said, you know what, we're going to be able to give the same treatment to misdemeanors. Mm-hmm. And the whole point is, I hate to talk that we're the carrot and stick organization, but we are. We try to get people to say, listen, here's why you need treatment. Very few people will look and say on their own, I need treatment. I will go forward. There are some, but not that many. There are many who are far more like a woman who I saw named Heather at our drug court graduation 3 weeks ago who said, you know, if the judge hadn't told me at the beginning, I need to change my life, I'm looking at prison, I wouldn't be standing here today clean and sober for 14, 15 months. So, I mean, I hate to sound like we have to scare people into programming, but what I know is sometimes that's what it takes for these long-term addicts, and I want them in treatment. That's what realignment does. This is going to take a lot of people who we're taking through realignment, turn them into misdemeanors, and in our society, just due to resources, even with the added resources, misdemeanors are not going to get the time. And that's my concern. Those are the two principal ones that cause me to say, although there are good things in the proposition, these two things outweigh it for me. It takes away DA and judicial discretion on these. I don't want to see that happen.
Jeff, before we go on to Dion, because I want her to talk also, what comments do you have about Steve's point that the proposition is not focused on the offender? Do you agree or disagree with him?
No, I disagree with that. I think that it's focused on the offender to the extent that, first of all, some offenders don't apply. So, in other words, if someone has a drug possession conviction, but they've previously been convicted of rape or child molestation or murder or any kind of crime where they have to register as a sex offender, then they're not eligible for that drug possession or that petty theft or that writing a bad check to be treated as a misdemeanor. It still can be treated as a felony. So I think the proposition still gives us the discretion to treat those very serious or those with very serious or violent records as felons. Secondly, the shortage that I have in my county, and my county is a relatively wealthy, relatively affluent, and relatively low-crime county, I mean, much like San Mateo, we don't have enough drug treatment facilities and sober living environments in our county for the people that need them. And so what is preventing people in my county from getting into drug treatment is that we don't have enough drug treatment facilities. And so I think that this proposition will help to provide more of those facilities. And drug treatment and mental health problems drive a lot of low-level criminality. And I think that this proposition will help us address that.
Any further comments from you, Steve?
The crimes that Jeff listed are accurate. They're outside of it. But it's a very narrow list. It's almost what he said, no more. Robbery, kidnapping, domestic violence are not. Somebody has a long record of those, having gone to prison for those violent offenses. They get the benefit of this no matter how many times they commit those offenses. So I think there's plenty of violent offenses that are outside of this. If they had changed that list, If the writers of this had worked and to give it a broader list, like Prop 36 that Jeff supported a couple of years ago that have been worked fine, might be a different feeling about it. This one here just takes too many violent offenders and makes them available for this remedy.
Do you agree with that, Jeff, or not?
Well, I think Steve is correct in his description of it, but we're not decriminalizing petty theft. We're not decriminalizing drug possession. We can still send them to jail for a year. So I think that that provides a sufficient penalty, a sufficient carrot, or pardon me, a sufficient stick to encourage the kind of changes that we want to have happen in people.
I'd like to hear from, I think all of us would like to hear from Dion Wilson, victims advocate for Crime Survivors for Safety and Justice. What is Crime Survivors for Safety and Justice, Dion?
Hi, thank you. It is a statewide network of almost 6,000 crime survivors from just about every walk of life and every type of neighborhood, from affluent to people who are stuck in high crime communities. And our view of this is that we really need to start healing the drivers of crime, which is why we support this proposition, because it provides money to put into drug and alcohol treatment and mental health and victim services, which is really lacking in this state for a lot of communities. The victim services in particular are extremely difficult to get. Many times the application process, people have to go into the DA's office, and for a lot of people in high crime communities, that's a very uncomfortable thing to have to do, especially if they've had negative contact with law enforcement in the past. It's not something they really feel comfortable doing. And so a lot of crime victims go untreated. And what I love about this initiative is it will direct funds to the Victim Compensation Board. However, it will be earmarked for trauma recovery center models. And currently, we have a budget written in at $2 million a year to fund trauma recovery centers.
When you say we, are you talking about the state of California?
The state of California,
okay.
Right. And this has the potential to increase that to $25 million. Mm-hmm. And those monies are acquired through the grant process. Different community organizations can apply to the Victim Compensation Board to acquire that money and then open a trauma recovery center right in the middle of the neighborhoods that need it the most. So that's one of the reasons that we're really supportive of this. And I just wanted to address something that Steve said about being able to look at the offender instead of the offense. And I think what we can all really tell, if we look at the recidivism rate in the state, that simply sending people to prison for repeat cycles of violence does not cure that.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't do anything to dial that back. And so while I totally understand from a law enforcement perspective how frustrating that might be to not be able to pile on these low-level felonies and put somebody away, we also have to acknowledge that prison does not rehabilitate people.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Steve, any comments before?
You know, I agree with you. And when I first started going up to prisons on hearings back in the late 70s, how old I am, at that point, there was more programming up there. And over the years, it's been cut and cut mm-hmm. and cut.
That's right.
And what I would really love to do is be able to join in a venture with everybody to say, let's get that back. I just heard this week that Delancey Street might be going, a great drug treatment program, mm-hmm. might be going into one of the prisons. And I thought, what a mm-hmm. great thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I'd focus, because I do agree with you very much. I'd like to see us get back to what we were when I think we did more to try and help people. Otherwise, I understand your point completely.
Yeah.
All right, Judge Hyman, Eugene, what comments do you have? Why I know you are in support of Prop 47. Why is that?
Yes. In addition to the reasons that Jeff has given and our other guest, I have just a couple of additional thoughts. Number one are the consequences of having a felony. They're lifetime consequences, because even if the felony is later reduced to a misdemeanor, if you want a license in California, and there's like over 120 different ways to get a license in California, most of those boards are going to deny you that license, even if you got your felony when you were 20 and you're now applying at 25. You want to be a lawyer, you want to be a doctor, you want to be a nurse, you want to be an accountant. It's not going to happen, because the way the boards look at it, you suffered the felony even if it's later reduced to a misdemeanor. Secondly, when we talk about the bad actors, look, we all want bad actors to do time. Most of these guys that are going to be doing even the low-level stuff are probably on probation or parole. And if they are, then their probation or their parole can be violated, in which case they'll do additional time on top of the 1 year. And if they're on probation or parole for a felony, they can go to prison for the prior felony. With respect to rehabilitation, most rehabilitation nowadays occurs at the county jail level, and the county jails are doing a terrific job in most counties. As has been mentioned, 60% of state prisoners go back. There's very little rehabilitation. Most prisons don't even have even Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous programs, let alone something more successful than that. And then lastly, yes, judges have discretion, but my experience is that most judges don't exercise discretion to reduce felonies to misdemeanors, for the simple fact that most judges, myself included, have a great deal of respect for the executive branch and defer to the executive branch in terms of what they do. And during my career, I granted very few motions to strike strikes because the law is, in my view, extremely conservative with respect to striking of strikes. I was more liberal with respect to motions to reduce felonies to misdemeanors, but even then, I didn't grant a great deal of them. So I think what this law does is it recognizes, in terms of the totality of what is real, and still gives the prosecutor a great deal of discretion, not as much as they would like. We all like discretion, and we never have enough, and that's just sort of the way that it is. And I think that maybe as a result of this passing, the legislature might take their responsibilities more seriously with respect to funding in those areas that our other guests have been talking about.
This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a program on we're actually having a debate, but it's really more a discussion as the way it's going. Hopefully a constructive discussion of Proposition 47, which is on the November ballot, Criminal Sentences, Misdemeanor Penalties Initiative Statute. My guests are, you just were listening to Judge Eugene Hyman, Superior Court Santa Clara County, retired. Before Eugene was Dion Wilson, victims advocate for crime survivors for safety and justice. And then we have also in the studio Steve Wagstaff, District Attorney for San Mateo County, and joining us also is Jeff Rosen, District Attorney for Santa Clara County. If you listen to us live, we will be taking some calls in the second half hour of the program. What I'd like to throw out to you and have some discussion here is that some say if Prop 47 passes, it will require the release of thousands of dangerous inmates. Jeff, how do you respond to that?
I disagree with that. The proposition provides that before anyone can be released from prison under this proposition, there has to be a hearing in front of a judge, and the people are represented through the DA. The inmate will be represented with an attorney, and the judge's decision will be based on whether or not this person poses an unreasonable risk of danger to public safety. So just first of all, nobody's automatically released. They go in front of a judge. There's argument on both sides. There's due process. And while there are specific crimes that are listed when a judge should consider what an unreasonable risk to public safety is, it also includes any serious or violent felony for which a person could be sentenced to life in prison. So if a judge thinks that this is a person that if they get out is going to use a gun and rob a bank or use a gun and try to hurt someone, or maybe they're going to rape someone and use a weapon or some kind of force, This is something a judge can look at and say, I'm not going to release this person. And I think what's really important to remember about this, these are all inmates that are getting out anyway. In fact, the Legislative Analyst's Office says that the average person that would qualify under this proposition, if they were released, would be released 4 to 5 months earlier. So these are people that are coming out anyway, and I think the question that the proposition poses is, when they get out, what are they coming out to? Is there going to be drug treatment programs for them? Are there going to be opportunities for them to turn their life around? Or is it just the same old thing, there's no programs, and then they're going to be back in custody again?
Steve Wagstaff, what do you have to say?
Two comments. Number one, you know what? When the realignment law came in 3 years ago from Governor Brown and the legislature...
Briefly, define realignment.
Realignment was the law that came in back in 2011, October, that said that for offenders getting out, that they will no longer be on parole. They're going to be on supervised by probation departments. We called it PRCS.
In the county.
Within the county.
Yeah.
It was basically turning it back to the county. It was no longer allowing us to sentence those people up to prison on the violations. Everything came to us. The belief being, we can do it better in the county. I actually agree with that. I think that's true. I think we do it better. But here's where my concern rests on what we're talking about in terms of those people who are there and they're getting out. That's what we do now. When those people get out in San Mateo County, and I know many other counties, I know there's some that they're not. Maybe Jeff's. I don't know. But in our county, we're connecting with everybody who gets out on the realignment law. We're giving them programs. We're finding them jobs. We're getting $15 million a year in San Mateo County.
From the
state of California, mm-hmm, to give people services when they get out in realignment. In San Mateo County, my great sheriff, Greg Monks, and my office, we've made the decision we want almost all of that money to go to the social services for these people getting out. That's where we do it. So we have arranged for there to be programming, jobs, education, treatment is needed, and if the person's willing to take it, if their hands are open, then we're going to have that there for them. The only other comment I would make is that Jeff is right. There has to be this finding that that judge doesn't have to let them out if they're a danger to public safety. However, the judge has to make a finding that the person is reasonably likely to commit one of those very, very serious offenses, which is murder, sexual assault, child molest. It doesn't mean, if a judge were to say, you know what, I think this person is a danger to commit robbery or domestic violence or the others, and I don't mean to fearmonger, it sounds like it, I don't. It's just a reality of what we're going to deal with. I think the judge's hands are tied. I don't think that that's... I think the definition that this proposition gives to unreasonable risk of danger to public safety, it's different than all the prior propositions we've dealt with. The prior propositions gave judges discretion. This one limits that discretion to these very narrow. For instance, assault on a police officer. If the judge were to say assault on a police officer with a handgun, doesn't qualify. That's not, you can't keep him out for that. It has to be assault on a police officer with a machine gun. That's how it's written. And that's not good for mine. Too narrow.
One further question that I'd like to pose to all of you. Some say, and this is with respect to the judge's discretion as encompassed in Prop 47, some say that even if the judge finds that the inmate poses a risk of committing crimes like kidnapping, robbery, assault, spousal abuse, torture of small animals, carjacking, or felonies committed on behalf of a criminal street gang, Proposition 47 requires their release. Jeff, what comments do you have on that?
First of all, I think that this is a semantic difference that we're talking about between Proposition 36, which gave judges discretion to release three strikers, and this proposition. I just think we're talking about letting somebody out of custody on average 4 or 5 months early. So the whole discussion here is not somebody that's serving a life sentence. We're talking about them getting out of custody 4 or 5 months earlier. And that's why I just think this is not that significant an issue. I think what this proposition does, it's more prospective. It's we're not going to be sending people to prison for these kinds of offenses, and we're going to take that money and we're going to invest it in the root causes and the drivers of this kind of criminality.
Steve, what do you have to say about that?
I see what Jeff's point is about looking forward, but I am concerned about that percentage, because it isn't just 4 or 5 months. That may be an average somebody has guesstimated. I know we've, in my county, we've sent people to prison who've committed one of these offenses who might have prior convictions for robbery, and we've sent them up for under the second strike law. We may have had our judges may have sent them to prison for 8-9 years. Mm-hmm. They're going to get out earlier than the 3 or 4 months.
Jeff, any comments?
Nothing really more to add to this. I think that, again, I think that judges will have the appropriate level of discretion here to keep people in custody who need to be in custody. And the people that can get out of custody and go on with their lives, we should let them out. I would point out that the recidivism rate for individuals released under the three strikes reform that was passed in 2002 is significantly less. It's about 5 or 10% versus 40% for other inmates that were let out during that time. In other words, we're letting people out of custody who are aging out of their criminality and don't need to be in prison.
Some say that Prop 47 keeps dangerous criminals locked up. Steve, what comments do you have about that?
That the passage of Prop 47 will keep them locked up? Well, I can tell you, trying to be fair here, if Prop 47 passes, I will certainly recognize we have more room in prison than we had before, if Governor Brown gives us that room. And my office will continue to be very aggressive on violent crime. We, as Jeff does, and I think most DAs do, when it's violent crime, we want to put the hammer down. We're going to be aggressive on that line. I'm not sure Prop 47 by itself promotes that, because the reduction in – we're sending the violent people to prison now. I think we're doing a good job of handling that. Judges do a good job of sentencing on it. I think what this will simply do is help Governor Brown deal with the overcrowding problem in respect to what you just mentioned.
Can I just chime in a little bit?
Yeah, please.
I, along the lines of the realignment money, that I really want to commend you for your use of realignment funds.
You're talking to Steve Wagstaff right now.
I am.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
The fact is that not every county uses their funds in the way that you do. And we have 58 counties, and you and a handful of others are using those funds in a very constructive way, and it's so much appreciated. But that's not what's happening across the state.
We have come to the end of the statewide version of the program. We will continue live in the Bay Area on the Internet. And I want to let you know, for those of you who will be listening to us again next week, we are going to have a Call the CPA Tax Specialist Night, where you can talk to CPAs off the air to try to save some taxes on your 2014 returns by calling 1-800-525-9917. All right, it is right now, looks like 7:29 at 91.7, your local public radio station, KLW in San Francisco. This is Your Legal Rights. I'd like to invite you to call in with questions, comments, concerns you may have. I have spent a great deal of time reviewing Prop 47 to be prepared. And, of course, not manipulate my guests and take all the time to talk about it myself. But it is a complicated proposition. And so if you have some questions, you have some comments, you have some thoughts, and you'd like to join us, the number is 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134. I think it's very important to my guests, and I think the audience generally throughout the state, to have you come in with your questions, your comments, your concerns about this, so I hope you will take advantage of it. For those of you who may have joined us a little bit late in the program, we're having a debate, discussion. I think these are all very good-natured guests I have, not looking for blood. There's no blood spilled yet. Anyway, discussion of Proposition 47, which the Attorney General has entitled on the November ballot. If you look, and hopefully you have received your general election official voter information guide, the Attorney General has entitled it Criminal Sentences, Misdemeanor Penalties Initiative Statute. And my guests are Jeff Rosen, District Attorney of Santa Clara County, Stephen Wagstaff, District Attorney of San Mateo County, Dion Wilson, Victims Advocate for Crime Survivors for Safety and Justice, and Judge Eugene Hyman, Superior Court, Santa Clara County, retired. So please join us with your questions, your comments, etc. Some people, before we take our first call, some have said that the judges will lose discretion, the prosecutors will lose discretion. Steve, what do you have to say about that, if 47 passes?
Well, I think that's my argument. I'd rather let the other side say why it doesn't. I think you've heard me say I do believe it does, because right now DAs, and with judges as a safety net, have the authority to decide whether a person deserves a felony or misdemeanor. You know, for all these offenses in my county, we the first at least one or two and sometimes three times, we charge them as misdemeanors because we know we can't. It's when we keep getting repeat offenders is when we elevate it up. I feel like I want to keep that discretion, and I want the DAs around the state because, again, what works in my county may be different than what works in Modoc County or Imperial County. So I prefer to have that discretion.
Jeff, what comments do you have about that?
Here's the issue. Our prisons are seriously overcrowded, both in our state, and we send people out of our state. So there's anywhere from, we're overcrowded, anywhere from 15 to 25,000 state prisoners. Voters do not want to build more prisons. They've made that very clear. But people want something different. You know, for the last 25 years, we built 22 new prisons in the state, two new public universities. But people want it to be the other way. So what voters are saying is they want more money spent on education, on drug treatment, and mental health, and less on locking people up, which costs $62,000 a year to send somebody to state prison. And so voters are driving this. It's not Governor Brown's problem with realignment. It's the problem is voters don't want to build more prisons. They've had enough. We're incarcerating people at five times the rate we did 50 years ago in this state. Mm-hmm. We're incarcerating people at a higher rate than any other state in our country, and we're not any safer than we were 50 years ago. So the argument about taking away some of prosecutors' or judges' discretion, we can protect the public by still being able to send robbers and rapists and gangbangers and child molesters to prison. And this proposition will enable us to do that because there will be room in prison for those people.
All right. I have one thing before we take our first caller. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. The Lawyer Referral Service is both for San Francisco as well as Marin County. For a referral to a lawyer, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. That number is 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and lawyer referral service. You should be able to, during normal business hours, reach a live human being at your lawyer referral service. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to find someone experienced in the area and set you up for a half an hour consultation with the attorney. Throughout California, with just minor exception, for a half an hour consultation, it'll charge you anywhere between $25 to $35. Does not go to the attorney, goes to the lawyer referral service to make that a very viable service for the consumer. So that's available to you. And Jay, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you.
You're on the air. Go ahead.
First, I want to say how grateful I think we all should be in the Bay Area that we've got two such thoughtful elected DAs, Steve Wagstaff and Jeff Rose. And even though they differ on this proposition, they're both so thoughtful. So that's just one comment I would make. The question I have is for Mr. Rosen, and I'll take the answer off the air. What type of relationship does he have? Does he have a good relationship with members of his Board of Supervisors?
You want to know what his relationship with the Board of Supervisors is?
Well, as it relates to, you know, this type of safety.
All right. Okay, very good, Jay. Yeah, I'll take your answer by your radio. Thank you very much for calling. Jeff, what comments do you have for Jay?
I just got cut off briefly, so in terms of, there's something about the Board of Supervisors.
Yeah, he's wondering what your relationship is with the Board of Supervisors with respect to what is being proposed by Prop 47.
So I talked to my Board of Supervisors about this and encouraged them to support it, and they are supporting it. And we had a spirited discussion about it, but I think that they were, you know, very persuaded by the idea that they'd like us to spend a little bit less money on incarceration and a little bit more money on rehabilitation and drug treatment and mental health. I think, you know, San Mateo County Board of Supervisors had a very eloquent opponent of Prop 47, and he swayed them in a different direction.
You want to comment on that, Steve?
You know, Jeff is way too nice. And, the sheriff and I did go before our board, and we had a very spirited discussion in a public session with many speakers. And our board did vote to oppose this, and understand where they were coming from. As you know, it was a member of our board, Carol Groom, who worked very with the California Organization of Government, state government, to convince them to oppose it. And so I think it's a spirited debate in the Bay Area with both sides putting out their points, and, you know, we'll see where it goes.
All right, here's the number again. You're being very quiet out there, everybody. Come on, don't be bashful. 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. Judge Eugene Hyman, you have been very busy with respect to Prop 47, I know, and I'm wondering what other thoughts you might have.
Well, I think the ability to incarcerate people on a temporary basis as part of drug rehabilitation is extremely important. It's sometimes referred to as shock incarceration. In other words, a person goes in for a short period of time if they come back dirty with respect to their drug tests, if they're not going to their meetings, if they're not following the instructions of the court, the instructions of the probation officer, and that's extremely important. A year is reserve time for that purpose is usually sufficient. And the other thing that is a possibility, certainly wouldn't be used too frequently, is that although California would make these offenses misdemeanors, under the federal law, my understanding is they would still remain felonies. So let's assume hypothetically that you had a couple of really bad actors that you really felt needed a more serious career path than under Prop 47 should it be passed. There is the possibility of working with the Northern District U.S. Attorney and having them prosecuted federally. Obviously, that's not something that's going to be done on a very frequent basis. It's extremely expensive, and they have their own issues. But
that would be in federal court.
Correct. And that's still going to remain a very serious offense in federal court. And the other thing is, with respect to records, again, people don't come back and request, as a general rule, and request that their records be reduced to misdemeanors. And even fewer people come back to have their records sealed. Although record sealing doesn't mean what it might suggest, it isn't like if the record goes away. And something else that we need to consider at some point is something, a legislation called Ban the Box. That is where you can't use, unless you're talking about being a police officer or guard or something if a security clearance, where there's too many record checks that are being done, and it's being used against people. And the research seems to indicate that it doesn't make really a difference in terms of outcome with respect to job performance and things of that nature. Again, an individual can do something stupid when they're young, and it's going to follow them for the rest of their lives. There's, you know, no redemption, no opportunity for change. Also, records affect women disproportionately than men because women are the primary caregivers. They take care of children. Felonies affect children. You know, people that can't get jobs have a tendency to reoffend and commit more crime. Then there's the possibility of kids going into foster care. Foster care is expensive. A certain percentage of kids going into foster care are going to go into juvenile delinquency. A certain percentage that go into juvenile delinquency become adult offenders. And I'm not saying that if you have children, you get a break. I don't think that's appropriate. All that I'm saying is that we have to be smart with respect to records. I was a police officer for 5 years while I attended law school, and in all candor, during that period of time, I had absolutely no sympathy at all for criminals, for drug users, for anybody that was violating the law. But as a result of being a judge, as a result of being every division of the court, you get a perspective in terms of the interrelationship between substance abuse, how it affects people in family court, abuse and neglect court, juvenile delinquency, probate, family, everywhere. It's everywhere. And we need to intervene and collaborate more effectively. It's unfortunate that the greater law enforcement community, I'm not talking about Steve and Jeff, I'm talking about the entire state, doesn't demand of the legislature and of the governor that these programs be funded. I mean, Prop 36 with respect to substance abuse passed a number of years ago. Initially, it was funded, and then during hard times, it stops. The other thing that happens all the time, and Steve and Jeff know this better than I, is that whenever there are problems economically, the legislature balances the budget on the backs of the counties. And so you have supervisors that, because of term limits, that become legislatures, then they come back and become supervisors again, and it's all balanced on the backs of the counties. I agree with Steve. One of my concerns is that during hard times in the future, are there going to be cutbacks? And based upon history, there probably will be. But that doesn't change the fact for me that this is the right thing to do, and that in most instances, there will be opportunities to be able to incarcerate people that need to be incarcerated because they will be on probation or parole for other offenses.
Yes, Dion, please.
So I just wanted to continue along that line of when there are economic challenges in our state, that programs are cut back and things are defunded. What is so great about Prop 47 is the Safe Neighborhoods and Schools Act is a protected fund. In the Schwarzenegger administration, when things started crashing, he actually took $80 million out of the victim compensation fund and did not put it back, mm-hmm. even though he said he would. Mm-hmm. And so these funds that will be collected over time by not sending people to state prison on these offenses, it is protected. It was specifically written.
By that you mean someone can't take that out of the fund and use it somewhere else?
That's right.
Steve, do you have any comments about this?
I pray you're right.
Yeah, I do.
I pray you're right because I've lived through 1999 with Prop 36, and we all said, well, we're going to give this a go. And it was about 2 years until it disappeared, and everybody now refers to that as the great fraud. This is protected mm-hmm. funding, but it's one person who gets to decide each year what's the savings. And that's
Are you talking about the governor?
I'm talking about the State Department Director of Finance.
And that
person gets to decide what it would be. The initiative's written to make that happen. I hope it does. Politics seems to mess us over sometimes.
Jeff, what comments do you have about this?
Well, I think the reason that this is such an attractive and sensible proposition is to just step back for a second and say, how much do we spend sending people to prison every year in our state? We spend about $10 billion. Now, that's more than the budget, the entire budget of 12 other states in the United States. It's an enormous amount of money. And what we're talking about is taking 2, maybe 3% of that money, of that $10 billion, $200, $300 million, which is a very small percentage of the overall prison budget, and spending that on programs to try to reduce mental health problems and drug treatment problems. So I think that's the sensible pro-law enforcement argument about this. And the last thing I would just add is that I hear from community groups all the time. I'm out speaking in the community. I know Steve does that as well. And when you say that somebody is a convicted felon, the image that comes to their mind is not a drug addict, a petty thief, a bad check writer, but it's a robber, a murderer, a rapist, child molester, drug trafficker. And I think we need to be mindful of who we label in our society as a convicted felon. Because once you're a convicted felon, you can't get government assistance for housing, you can't get student loan assistance, it becomes very difficult to get a job, And so now you have someone who has a felony, and you want them to then reenter back into civil society, and now it's even more difficult for that person to do that. So I sort of think that both from the left and the right, from a social justice perspective as well as a tough-on-crime perspective, this is a sensible proposition.
Let me ask you, all of you, to try to clarify this to make sure that we all, those of us listening to you, really understand this. If someone has been convicted of a felony, and under Prop 47, if it passes, that person has the opportunity under the law, that if it passes, to petition the court to reduce the felony to a misdemeanor. Is it fair to say that if the court grants that, with the discretion that you've said the court will have, after examining carefully, and there be court hearings on this, and the court orders that the felony ends and now it's a misdemeanor, will that person be able to take advantage of the misdemeanor conviction and feel comfortable that no longer will that felony conviction, which may have been removed, is not going to follow that person? Judge Hyman?
Well, I guess in theory, the records with the state are going to be changed. The records with the FBI will be changed. And in theory, they're now convicted of a misdemeanor, is the way I understand
Steve,
it.
Steve, do you have some comments on that?
But I think Judge Hyman said it earlier when he said for all these licensing boards, they see it. They will see on that record check, oh, it was a felony, and because of Prop 47, it got reduced. So, but Jeff also noted earlier, consider this prospectively. Yes, we have whatever it is, 10,000 or more people will deal with this in the past. Jeff's comment is look prospectively, and for those people, it mm-hmm. will be a misdemeanor. I agree. But for the people, as Judge Hyman's noted twice tonight, for them, it'll still be in the record that they were originally felons.
Jeff, what comments do you have about that?
I think for people that who have committed a crime that's been called a felony, even though by operation of law in the future that prior conviction will now, you know, will be changed to a misdemeanor, I think there still may be some difficulties for those people to get employment because they'll still have something that showed as a felony, even though it will then show that it's been changed. But I think that prospectively it will just be a misdemeanor, and that will be helpful because people, those individuals will be held accountable. They may be punished by up to a year in jail and made to pay restitution, but then they'll be able to get a job and go to college if they want to and become productive members of the society without there being the obstacle of the, some have called it the scarlet letter, the felony on their record.
1-415-841-4134 if you would like to join us with your question, your comment, your concern. 1-415-841-4134 for your legal rights. Our discussion debate of Proposition 47 on the November ballot entitled by the Attorney General, Criminal Sentences, Misdemeanor Penalties Initiative Statute. Dion, you mentioned the name of the statute also, the proposition also. It is also known by what name?
The Safe Neighborhoods and Schools Act.
Safe Neighborhoods and Schools Act, mm-hmm. which obviously takes into account hopefully funding that's going to go to schools for truancy and assistance with drug treatment programs, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. We will take another call in a minute. I just want to alert those of you who might be beginning to think about, is there any way that I can avoid some taxes this year on my 2014 return? Maybe some of you are thinking about that. Well, every year I do this toward the end of the year, a year in tax tips, and of course this will be with respect to your 2014 return. We're going to do that next week. We will also have a Call a CPA tax specialist night with a number of CPAs and tax specialists off the air on the 800 number, and I encourage you to join us at 1-800-525-9917 if you'd like to try to get some insight of what you might do before the year ends in terms of trying to reduce your taxes on your 2014 return. Tom, welcome to the program. Tom, are you there? Hello, Tom? Well, I don't know what happened to Tom. Tom, if you can't hear us, try dialing again. Tom was actually called and was about to talk with us, and I don't know what happened. But let me give you the number. Now it's on hold. All right. Tom, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I certainly can now, Tom. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. I just wanted to make a comment that for every dollar that we spend on drug and alcohol treatment, we save seven. And the problem that I ran into as a program director of a nonprofit drug and alcohol program that was funded in part by county and at the time Prop 36 was nobody wants to give up their little bit of that $7. You know, the emergency room doesn't want to, and the sheriff's department doesn't want to, and probation doesn't want to. And so we just continue to spend, you know, tons and tons of money that doesn't really accomplish anything. And it's really frustrating. And by the way, also, I'm a convicted felon, and if my job knew about it, I wouldn't have a job.
Mm. Wait a minute. Say that again, Tom. If what? What did you say?
I'm also a convicted felon,
yes.
And if my job knew about it, I wouldn't have a job.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Tom, for being so upfront on that. Let me see if I can get some comments. Jeff, were you able to hear Tom?
I was able to hear him, and I'm very pleased that he's got a job and that he's trying to, you know, help people with drug problems. I think that that we know that what drives a lot of low-level crime in our communities is our drug problems and mental health problems. I know that I see in my county there's sometimes fatal encounters between people that are mentally ill and the police department, and we just need more of these kinds of programs to help people. And I think that we can do it in the climate that we're currently in because our crime rates are at historic lows. If you look at crime in California over the last 50 years, we're about as safe as we've ever been. Now, it's ticked up a little bit the last couple of years, certain property crime a little bit, but in general, we're really at historic lows. And I think that part of the reason we're at such lows is because we've locked up for a long time serious and violent offenders. And I just think the net that we were using to lock up people was a little bit too big of a net, and this proposition is going to make the net a little bit smaller and more effective.
So are you saying, Jeff, if Prop 47 passes, you don't see the crime rate increasing with people being able to take advantage of having what might have been a felony now considered a misdemeanor?
I don't really see that because the serious and violent offenders are still going to be locked up and sent to prison under this proposition. I think that what drives the crime rate and what's driven the crime rate down in our state over the last 20 or 25 years is, A, we've locked up serious and violent offenders for longer periods of time. B, demographics. A smaller percentage of our society now are men between the ages of 18 and 35, which is the prime period for men to commit crimes and violent crimes. And three, policing is better than it was 25 or 30 years ago. Police officers are better trained, they're more engaged with the community, and that's also had an effect on driving crime down. And I think that this proposition will, it's hard to predict what the crime rate is going to be from year to year, but I don't see this proposition having a dramatic effect on the crime rate in the first year or two. I think it's something that over time is going to help us keep the crime rate low.
Steve Wagstaff, what do you think, Steve?
I hope every word Jeff spoke comes true. I don't feel secure, but I know it's a guess by anybody's side. I just know that the various people who are the experts in the field, state police chiefs, state sheriffs, state DAs, Senator Dianne Feinstein today, in an editorial she wrote, all are uniformly saying that they believe that there's too great a chance that crime will go up, and for that reason they have urged opposition to this. And but I hope Jeff's right. If it does pass, I hope every word he speaks is right. I'll want it to happen that mm-hmm. way. I just share the view that I'm concerned that it won't. I'd rather take other alternatives to achieve the goals being discussed tonight.
We have about 3 minutes left in the program, and I'm wondering, Jeff, is there any issue that we haven't even touched upon that you would like to bring forth at this point?
No, I think that we've pretty well covered it in terms of the, I think, what the positives and negatives will be here. I think that it's interesting, as Steve mentioned, Dianne Feinstein, just the support in favor of Proposition 47 is very broad and includes a lot of very conservative folks like Newt Gingrich and the Orange County Register. as well as folks from the NAACP and the labor movement and the LA Chamber of Commerce. So I think there's really a meeting of a broad spectrum of our community that's looking to make this change.
Okay, Steve, what
I share his view, but Jeff, I'd never rely on Newt Gingrich, but that's my personal view. The there are 58 counties and there are 58 DAs. Yeah. Other than possession of cocaine and heroin, every DA, Jeff, every other DA can implement all these changes if they want.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the problem, though.
This is Eugene.
Okay. I mean, if Steve were making these decisions daily, I'd feel a lot better. Steve isn't. Mm-hmm. Steve has a staff of about 50 people. Jeff Rosen has a staff of over 100 people. I'll never forget, I had a DA in front of me prior to my retirement, and I said, you know, I really don't think that the way in which you're going about this case is consistent with the way the DA wants this case handled. And this DA told me, that might be true, Judge, but I work for Supervisor so-and-so, and this supervisor is going to be making a recommendation regarding my step increase, and I'm going to do what my supervisor tells me to do.
This is a supervisor in the DA's
office?
Yes,
correct. And this is reality. This is reality that the district attorney, and I've met Steve on several occasions. We've talked about death penalty. We've talked about two strikes. We've talked about Proposition 47. He's a righteous guy. He's the real deal. I would take him to the bank. but the reality is he's one person, and he knows what's going on in his county with respect to the death penalty. He knows what's going on with respect to his office. If any politician is being prosecuted, he's informed. He knows. He's got the pulse with respect to those two things. With respect to everything else, it depends upon how much press it's getting. There's no way that he can keep track, that anyone can keep track. There's no way that the presiding judge of a court knows what all of his or her judges are doing. It just doesn't work that way. And unfortunately, while he's a righteous guy, not everyone else understands the party line or is willing to abide by the party line. And it's a result of that, unfortunately, that we need to sometimes have reforms.
I think we have nearly come to the end of the program, and I think I'm going to thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
District Attorney Steve Wagstaff, District Attorney Jeff Rosen, Victims Advocate for Crime Survivors for Safety and Justice, Dion Wilson, and Judge Eugene Hyman, Superior Court, Santa Clara County, retired. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Wonderful to have you on the program, frankly. All right, everybody, for next week, if you have any interest whatsoever in trying to save some taxes, that's the topic, year-end tax tips. We're going to also have a call a CPA tax specialist night for you to be able to call in, ask questions off the air, whether you listen to the program live or delayed. This is available to you on October 22nd, starting at 7 p.m., 1-800-525-9917. My guests on the air next week will be David Hellman, Jason Gallick, tax law specialists, and we'll also talk about some local issues of taxes, too. Thank you very much for listening to Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney.